Please join me in prayer. God, our great creator, may the words of my mouth and the meditations of all of our hearts be found pleasing in your sight. For you are our rock and our redeemer. Amen. So friends, if you thought we were going to get through the fall without talking about volleyball. So in 2006, the NCAA Women's Volleyball Tournament was hosted in Omaha, Nebraska, which is about 20 minutes away from my hometown. And because it was so close, and because the Nebraska Huskers would eventually go on to win that year, and my family, of course, are diehard Husker fans, my mom made sure that we got tickets, and we went as a family. And it was incredible to be there. But it is also important to keep in mind that my twin and I were somewhere around 8 or 9 years old for this event. So around this same time, in the mid-2000s, late early 2000s, my brothers and I were really enjoying a particular brand of sneakers from the brand Puma. And at the time, they were kind of known for having excessively long shoelaces. So just keep that in mind, okay? So we watched the match. I can't remember if it was the semifinal or the final, but we were there with 18,000 other people at the Quest Center in Omaha. And as we were leaving, we joined that sea of fans decked out in Husker red to exit. And we were coming down this extra long escalator. And everyone was packed like sardines, trying to leave, get to their cars, get home. When my twin's untied shoelace of his Puma sneaker got caught in the bottom of the escalator as we were stepping off. And he and my dad were trying to figure out how to get his foot out of this mechanic. And hundreds of people were just continuing to pile down and pile down and pile down, and they couldn't stop, the machine wouldn't stop, and it was scary. People were piling down on top of him, and it was overwhelming to just be witnessing this happening to my brother, let alone imagining what he might have been going through in that moment. So as the people kept coming down, my dad was trying to pull the shoelace out of the machine, and it just kept not working. And you know, when you're in those frantic moments, you can't really think about what other options there might be. The one thing in front of you is the only option in front of you. So finally, somebody stepped off and turned around to help, and he ultimately just pulled the shoe off of my brother's foot. And it worked, right? We were able to get the shoe out of the machine. My brother was out of the flow of traffic, and everything was fine. And we all have those moments of facing time when pressure is closing in on us, although not always in your face as thousands of people trying to leave a sporting event. But there are moments, and these moments are when we feel threatened or that we are in a risky position and we feel uncertain of how we move forward or we proceed. And in those moments, it isn't really possible to move forward on anything significant without risk of some kind or another. In many of our lives, yes, these are real risks that we may be facing, but they're not always or not necessarily those risks that have the potential to put our lives in danger or place our loved ones in harm's way. And yet, that is a risk that hundreds of thousands of people around the world take every day. And the stories that make it to our globally privileged social locations, especially in this political climate, are those stories and those experiences of immigrants and refugees, where individuals and families find themselves in positions of placing their lives and the lives of their loved ones and the possibility that things might be even worse, taking this massive risk with every aspect of their lives. So in both Joshua and Matthew that we heard, God works through people's complex lives, seen where, acting under pressure, the seemingly helpless discover their own agency. And they act on it in ways that will have wider implications than they might imagine. Rahab, in particular, faces tremendous unjust pressures from both the king and from the Israelite spies. And what she does is make room, not just for the spies, but she makes room for a way forward for her family, that very same family that will become a branch of Jesus's lineage. Right, Matthew begins with Judah as the father of Perez and Zerah, whose mother was Tamar. Perez was the father of Hezron, and Hezron was the father of Aram. Aram was the father of Amminadab. Amminadab was the father of Nashon. Nashon was the father of Salmon. Salmon was the father of Boaz, whose mother was Rahab. Boaz was the father of Obed, whose mother was Ruth. In the Gospel of Matthew, the author begins with recounting the genealogy of Jesus's family line. And of note, in those very few lines and few passages, are the presence of Rahab alongside Tamar, a woman who wisely embeds herself into the ancestor narratives of Genesis. She's come alongside by Ruth in this story, a woman who displays the love and the loyalty of human capacity in the midst of tragic circumstances to continue her participation in the community of the faithful people of God. And Bathsheba is in this narrative, in this lineage, a woman whose husband was taken from her because of another man's lust and ultimately brought forth the child who would become King Solomon. And Mary, a girl with none of her own power or authority in her society, but who put her trust in God's presence and in God's call. These women included in this long genealogy of Jesus highlight God's pattern of making room in the story of salvation for those who are often pushed to the margins. Their experiences of vulnerability and coercion and risk expose the need for spaces of refuge, while their courage and their ingenuity show how sanctuary can be created even in threatening circumstances. In a few books in the Hebrew scriptures, in Job, in Psalms, and in Isaiah, the word Rahab is the word or the name of a sea monster that is defeated by God. But the word Rahab, lowercase r, also means broad or spacious. In Rahab of Jericho, these are elements of both a powerful person who protects her family from war and pillage, and of someone who makes space for the Israelite spies, converting an enemy into an ally. I can imagine that if she had known what escalators are, she may have had that similar overwhelming fear of people piling down, or expectations and tasks and needs piling down and continuously flooding her. But rather than needing someone to come and save her, in this moment of unjust pressures from her own king of Jericho, as well as what the Israelite spies have placed on her, she has the capacity to tear off her own shoe and figure out how to protect herself and her family. And what all of these women show us is that to trace through Christ's lineage is to participate in God's work of making space, of generating room for safety and dignity and belonging where the world would often deny it. The church, broadly, not just this church, has a long and a complicated history of serving as a place to seek shelter and refuge in times of distress and for those facing threats. But in our own time and circumstances, we see that changing in this country, where so many powerful figures who would love to see more money in their bank accounts and would rather strip churches of their ability to provide safety and shelter to our neighbors who are terrorized by hate-filled rhetoric and unlawful detention and deportation and death. But the call of Christ has always been to increase our capacity to invite people, to create room for community, to create room at the table, and to embody the love of God in the world. In the year before I was appointed here at Whitney, I served a small church in the Seattle area, part-time, that has served over the last 4 years as a temporary shelter for asylum seekers coming to the United States from all over, but particularly from Venezuela and from Congo. Somehow, a few years ago, as people were coming to the U.S.'s southern border after this long journey from Africa to Brazil, and often walking from Brazil to the U.S. southern border, the business card of this pastor made its way to those folks and was passed around and handed around, and people said, if you call her or if you show up, she will help. So this little church, the congregation is about a size of 9 or 10 people, has served for 4 years as a shelter. And over those 4 years, over 4,000 people have come through the doors and received help and assistance. I don't know how it happened. And for as long as she can, this pastor and this church have continued to say yes however they can. Starting with a tent village on their property when people first started showing up, and eventually moving to needing to allow people to sleep inside the building. So during the day, their fellowship hall, this room that's maybe 40 by 60, sets up with tables and chairs, and it is this gathering space for people stuck in limbo or working on paperwork or trying to apply for food assistance or housing or take English lessons or just wait for their kids to come home. But then around 7 or 8 p.m., this room transforms, and everyone had a role to contribute in this change. Kids would grab the brooms and the mops and sweep all of the lines, while dads and brothers and sisters would tear down the tables and move the chairs. And magically, in about 7 minutes, this room transforms from tables and chairs and gathering to wall mattresses across the floor. They haven't done it perfectly. No organization or single church ever could. But this church continues to live into the call of Christ to make room in the world through love for those most marginalized by our systems of oppression and wealth consolidation. Everything that we are inundated with, day in and day out, with headlines overwhelming us in local, national, and global news, can tend to feel like that escalator full of people piling down on us, stuck at the bottom. And sometimes we find ourselves needing to be like Rahab, quick thinking enough to protect ourselves and our families. But sometimes we might be like my brother, aided by a stranger that offers us a moment of rest and relief by taking the pressure off of our shoulders alone. And other times still, perhaps more often than being at the bottom of the escalator ourselves, we have the opportunity to be that help, extending release to our neighbors, known or unknown, as a way that we extend God's peace and protection in complex situations. Amen.